1 o'clock, BBC Radio Devon, Katrina Swan, our councillor, a relationships councillor, is with us once again today. Katrina, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Fitz, nice to be back.
Right, today, sex addiction. What is it? What is it? Come on, that's the question that must start the entire conversation.
Okay, well, what it isn't is a bit of fun, you know, kind of blokes, you know, sort of getting it where they can and, you know, this sort of kind of attitude that society has is, well, yeah, you know, good for you, lad, on you go, that type of thing. It's not that at all. It's a specific syndrome of behaviour with underlying emotional issues. And I've got a definition here, and our guests, hopefully, that we'll come to in a minute, will be able to perhaps provide, you know, a definition of for themselves. Ours is... the features that distinguish sexual addiction from other patterns of sexual behaviour are that the individual is not reliably able to control the sexual behaviour, and that the sexual behaviour has significant harmful consequences and continues despite these consequences. So it's an element of lack of control
here. Is it mostly men?
I would say that it's very hard to say. I think it's probably true to say that perhaps men come forward more than women. So I think it's hard to make that judgment. But again, when we get to our guests, I think that's perhaps a question that those at the coalface might be able to answer.
Okay, well, do you want to introduce our guests into the studio today?
Okay, so our guests are John and Phil. Mm-hmm. From the Sex Addicts Anonymous group.
Okay. John, can we come to you first of all? Would you like to tell us a little about your story?
Yes, thank you. I've been a sex addict for since I was very young, and it wasn't until I came to Sex Addicts Anonymous that I realised that it was a major problem in my life, you know. I saw I was perhaps a little bit different, or other people were doing these same things, you know, and it wasn't a problem, you know. But when I got to Sex Addicts Anonymous, I was living in a world of fantasy, acting out my fantasies, and I was unable to enjoy my life, you know. It was a very narrow-minded view of the world, you know. I mean, what defined me as a sex addict was that... there were behaviours that once I started on them, I couldn't stop. I didn't know where it would take me. And no matter what the pain or consequences of those actions were, even if I was totally disgusted with myself and decided that I would never, ever engage in that activity again, within a short space of time, perhaps a few days, a week or a month, I would be plotting up how much better it would be next time, you know. But it was always an empty promise that this would give me fulfilment, satisfaction, and make life more exciting, you know. And it was always ended up leaving me feeling, you know, pretty disgusted with myself, you know.
In the terms of a relationship, did you hurt a lot of people or one person?
Oh, I was like a whirlwind roaring through the lives of other people, you know. I had very little empathy with other people. I didn't realise that they, you know, had feelings like I felt, you know. It seemed that my primary objective in life was to think of things that I thought would make me happy and do them regardless of the cost of other people.
Did you get married?
Yeah, I was married, yeah.
At the time. So I'm assuming that relationship took quite a battering.
It was almost like, until I got into Sex Addicts Anonymous, it was an impossibility for me to form any sort of meaningful relationship with other people. You know, I was always... I could never, like, afford for them to really get to know me, you know. I was always guarded and just putting on a front of trying to appear normal, you know.
Okay. Well, our other guest in the studio is Phil. Any of that you recognise?
Absolutely, yeah. I'd say my circumstances were somewhat different to John's, but I came to my first meeting about 6 years ago. As it happens, I was single. But, I mean, I'm a sex addict because when I start out on certain sexual behaviours, I lose all control over what I do, how long it takes, what the consequences are. And, you know, that's probably true of most human beings. I had friends who did some of the same things. Most people do things in their sex lives they might feel ashamed of or regret. And they might do it once or twice, and it might destroy a relationship, or it might cause them a great deal of shame, or they might fear the consequences, but they'll stop. I always reached a point where I would set out to do, not go the whole distance, but just to control and enjoy the behaviours. And I would find myself in exactly the same mess as I'd always found myself in before, and very often somewhat worse. Of course, it's a progressive condition for a lot of us.
But you're here talking about it, both of you, today, which I find a remarkable step forward, and I'm guessing that is, with you, Katrina, you know, half the battle won here.
I think it is, because how we relate, probably see it come through the door, is from the relationship aspect, that somebody may well recognise that their behaviours are causing difficulties in their relationships, or it may be that the partner flags it up that certain activities and behaviours are causing difficulties and will ask their, you know, partner to come along. And it can be sometimes difficult for the person to actually recognise that they have got a problem. So in the beginning, for us, it's almost like having to confront the denial and get the person to actually accept that they have got this particular problem, and that it's not, in effect, you know, as the gentleman to the right of me, Phil, has just said, you know, where somebody, you know, has a couple of affairs or does something once or twice and then recognises, okay, I'll stop now because, you know, this is out of order, this is causing my partner difficulty. So it's very much that element that we're looking to work with and diagnose, because that's when we would be referring somebody on to somebody like Sex Addicts Anonymous as part of a treatment program, if you like, rather than working with them ourselves at Relate. You know, we can work with people who are having one or two affairs or, you know, are indulging in some forms of behaviours, but it's the addictive element. And so we would be doing, you know, an assessment process and then deciding what our role is and recognising our limits and referring.
How do you even start with confronting somebody who suspects that they are a sex addict? How do you, as a counsellor, obviously they would come to you, how on earth do you start? I mean, where do you start? Where do you draw the line between normal behaviour and behaviour which you think may actually indicate?
As Phil has said, it's this element of not being able to stop when you know that it's harming you and it's harming your relationships. It's that. If you can recognise that and think, right, okay, I'm going to work with my partner and relate to, you know, to recover from this breach of trust, etc., etc., then you can almost say, well, that's not an addict. But it's when you have that intention and that desire, but you still go out and do it time and time and time again, that is the addictive bit. And it's almost like you have to get somebody to be able to recognize that, you know, look at what you're doing, look at this pattern. And we do have certain diagnostic criteria, which probably too long to go into actually, you know, on the radio, but there will be certain diagnostic criteria that we're looking at to be able to, you know, tell the difference, really.
OK. BBC Radio Devon, it's 27 minutes past the hour of one. Are you all three happy to stay for a while? Fantastic.
Yeah,
OK. Katrina Swan is with us at the moment, relationships counsellor. Katrina, is sex addiction common? That's the word to use? I mean, the numbers of people out there? As opposed to, I don't know, cigarettes or alcohol, or whether you can be that trite. I mean, there are different problems with different people.
It's difficult to say, but I think it's probably becoming more recognised now, and perhaps more people are prepared to speak out. Whether that means it's more common, I don't know. You know, kind of think the jury's out on that one, but it does seem that more people are prepared to speak out and recognise this now as an addiction. Whereas I think before, people didn't take it seriously at all. You know, that sex addiction wasn't necessarily, you know, recognised. And there are still people today who actually deny that there is such a thing as sexual addiction. So I think, you know, you're kind of battling, you know, attitudes as well, really.
Attitudes and the public and the attitudes of others. I'm guessing, John and Phil, you've come across some pretty negative people in the past that just look at you and think, oof, if that's the proper term, oof. Yeah?
Well, I think people have a lot of funny ideas about
about what it is to be a member of Sex Addicts Anonymous. Firstly, the stuff that brings people to our doors isn't necessarily, they aren't necessarily behaviours which society has a problem with. As a sex addict, my problem is I'm powerless over certain of my sexual behaviours. They tended to be progressive. At the end, they were probably going to get me, well, they were going to get me into a lot of trouble. But I know people in SAA whose behaviours really weren't hurting anyone else, but they had taken over their lives. They had lost control. The consequences were building up, and they knew they'd become a slave to their obsession. By the same token, obviously, you do meet people who have got into an awful lot of trouble, and it really doesn't matter. In fact, anyone who attends a meeting will find that we don't actually talk very much about the kind of lurid details of what people used to get up to. We've got a solution, we've recovered. We are much more interested in talking about the way we lead our lives today.
I was going to ask and bring you on to that subject. I mean, how have you changed your behaviour? We'll start with you.
Well, I basically took on the programme of recovery that was presented to me by the people I met in SAA. And, I mean, I thought I had certain problems when I first came through the door. And I think there were three things that could have sent me back out again. Number one is we are a 12-step fellowship. We're modelled on Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought the 12 steps were for religious people. I'd been an atheist since about the age of six. If anybody had tried to sell me their God, I'd have been out the door instantly. And believe me, you don't have to believe anything to work the 12 steps, except possibly that you're not going to sort out your problems on your own.
Mm.
I also thought being a sex addict, meant you had to stop all sexual behaviours. That's also not true. I only had to stop the behaviours I'm powerless over. There's a lot of stuff left over that's, well, pretty much okay. It's not a problem.
I was going to say, you obviously still feel... am I right in saying you still feel a great shame about what you were going through?
Actually, I'd have to say no. I mean, I wouldn't be... if I felt ashamed of myself, I don't think I'd be here. As a newcomer to SAA, I was overwhelmed by remorse and shame and fear of consequences, and I found it very difficult to live from day to day, whether I was abstaining from my behaviours or not. The heart of our programme, really, and why we're both here today, is that we try to help others, and I try to help others who are like me, and I will share the worst of what I did without fear or favour if it'll help someone else, because it gives me freedom from that obsession. And because I've got that freedom from obsession today, I am a different man with a different life. And I enjoy life, and I'm free of that burden of shame that was so unendurable when I first turned up.
John, if I can bring you in on this, anything that that sounds familiar there?
My since I came into the fellowship of SAA... my life has changed unrecognisably. Today I'm able to have relationships with other people, I'm able to stand up straight and look the world in the eye, whereas before I felt so bad. I felt like a rat or a snake. I was skulking around trying to avoid people. I was looking at the floor all the time, I'd be anybody for anything for anybody, as long as I got what I was going for, And today, my life has changed so much, it's virtually unrecognisable, Today I can think of other people, the sex side of things is no longer an obsession, When I had my family, my wife would suggest a trip to the beach, I mean, my first thought was, oh, what chances would I have to act out? I wouldn't be thinking, oh, great, the kids should... we'd need to take this for the children, or, I mustn't forget this for my wife or whatever. It would always be about me and my obsession, you see. Well, today, I'm not haunted by these, inappropriate and obtrusive thoughts, I can focus on my work, I can focus on, like I said, helping other people recover, my life's turned around completely. But I mean, I would say that I was a recovered sex addict. I'm not I'm not the person I was, but if I stop practicing the program of recovery and getting the principles into my life, then I will very quickly, my thinking will change again, and I'll revert to the type that I am, you know.
So you would slip back like any other addict.
Yeah.
I mean, they always say, oh, he was an alcoholic. No, you're not. You are still an alcoholic.
Yeah.
It could happen in any way. But you're still getting not only support from the group, but also from your family?
Yeah, I mean, today I've got a family. You know, I can enjoy my family, whereas before it was, I've heard other people say, like, you know, they resent their children because they get in the way of their acting out behaviours, you know. And today, you know, I can enjoy my family. I can change what I'm doing. I'm adaptable, and there's nothing, you know. It's like I went to the meeting. And I was told that I needed a higher power in my life, you know. It could be anything. And it was I heard it explained at a different 12-step fellowship that, you know, that sex addiction was my higher power, you know. Mm-hmm. I relied on that to change the way I felt, you know. It made life more exciting, you know. But it was always an empty promise, you know.
Okay. Well, thank you both for your honesty. I mean, I tell you, it's a very difficult, very delicate step here, but obviously you have been backed by SAA all along the way. Can you tell me about this group?
Well, where to begin? I know the group itself is about, I think it's getting on for 10 years old now. I turned up about 6 years ago. There is no particular type of person who comes to SAA. We have people from every kind of, you know, class background, education, every walk of life. We do have female attendees, you know, and you know, if there are any ladies listening or women listening to this who feel they may have a problem with their sexually compulsive behaviour, then, you know, that I can assure you that my home group is an extremely safe, comfortable and respectful place, you know, for a female newcomer. But what I found, I stuck around for a while. I was not sure I belonged there. I hadn't ever thought of my sexual behaviours as being addictive in nature. It was news to me. I knew I was in trouble, and I knew that my life had become a burden to me, and that, you know, my acting out behaviours were the only things that seemed to put any colour into my existence. But I also knew that they were destroying my life as well. So I turned up. I listened to other people talking about their experiences and places they'd been, the things they'd done, and more than anything else, the way they'd thought around their behaviours. And after a while, I can't say I was happy about this, after a while I thought, I'm actually like these people, and I'm going to have to do the things they did, you know, in order to recover. You know, that what we do to recover is another story, but it is a programme of action. I didn't find that any of it was particularly difficult or challenging. They were all actions I could either take them or not take them. It was down to whether or not I was willing. And as I took the actions, worked through the steps, my life improved. I began to realise that this stuff was really working. You know, and I didn't really expect it to. You know, I was pretty pessimistic, I've found that, you know, I was made certain promises as a newcomer about basically I could be free from the obsession and that I could enjoy life sober. And very much despite my own thinking as a newcomer, I've seen those promises come true in my life. You know, and the reason we're here today really is this is one of the things we do to maintain our own recovery, to continue to enjoy life sober. We're not do-gooders. We're not a campaigning society. We try to carry our message to the still suffering sex addict, and in order to maintain our own sobriety. But
when you say sobriety and sober, there you're keeping away from your particular problem. I mean, do you have other vices? Do you smoke? Do you drink? Do you lose control, or are you worried that is part of the problem?
Well, I've got other addictions. I think I've heard it said about it being an addictive personality, but what I would like to say is that the problem isn't, you know, it's not the sex addiction. The problem isn't the alcohol. You know, the problem isn't the smoking. The problem is me. You know, it's the way, through working the program and working through the steps, I discovered that I had hold of the wrong end of life, you know. Mm. My view on life was all about me, you know. I had basic defects of character. I was self-centered, selfish, dishonest, you know, lustful, you know, to the extreme. I mean, these are all things that help people to survive in life, but in my type of person, they run to extremes, you know. So I never thought that people treated me right. And yet when I worked through the steps and I looked at how I treated other people and looked at how I would have felt if somebody had treated me like that, I realised that I was a nasty piece of work, you know. And through getting the principles into my life, what I found is my whole attitude and outlook has changed. I mean, they call it, you know, like a spiritual awakening, you know. My problem was deep-seated, you know. It was a spiritual malady, you know. I just got it all wrong from the start, you know.
Takes some guts to admit that, I tell you. There's more people in society would admit that. Society might be a better place. Katrina, you've been very quiet there and listened to all of this. This is nothing new to you, I'm guessing. This is your line of work.
It is very interesting, actually, to hear, because although, in a sense, what you're saying is, sorry, my headphones are slipping off, that it is my line of work. But as a psychosexual therapist, yes, I do come across people who have, you know, addictive sexual behaviours. But I recognise my own limits, if you like, and there will be things that I can do in my role to address this issue with people, but there will be limits, and so you know, I would be referring them on or asking somebody in a kind of program of working with me through Relate to actually, as part of a treatment strategy, then, if you like, to actually to participate in a culture of recovery and to establish sobriety. So that's where we would, you know, kind of link in to the Sex Addicts Anonymous. So they would be part of the treatment program or treatment program of change that we might be looking at, but there would be elements of it that we would be signposting to somewhere else. Because for us at Relate, as I say, this would be coming through probably more as a couple issue. Mm. So, you know, would be dealing with the impact on the couple relationship, and also perhaps providing support for the other partner whilst their partner was maybe looking at their own individual behaviour, perhaps with Sex Addicts and you know, Anonymous. So where Sex Addicts Anonymous strikes me, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, is very much about you and taking responsibility for your behaviour. Relate, in a way, would be setting this in a context of thinking about, okay, what had been the impact on the relationships that you were or are still in, and also maybe looking at some perhaps of the reasons why this behaviour may have begun. And we may have slightly different views on what that's about, you know, because we're coming from different theoretical backgrounds, in a sense. You know, ours may be looking at some family of origin work and thinking about sex addiction in terms of perhaps masking some other lacks, maybe in attachment issues and things like that. Again, probably too much to go into on this particular.
Phil, you have something to say on that one?
Yeah, actually, I'd possibly enlighten you slightly there, Katrina. Oddly enough, as an individual and as a member of Sex Addicts Anonymous, I have absolutely no opinion on why I ended up as a sex addict. And a lot of us, when we come to SA for the first time, we've spent a hell of a lot of time trying to work out exactly why we ended up doing the things we're doing. And the truth is, as far as I'm concerned, it just doesn't matter. You know, you will meet people who, you know, they have terrible things in their background, things in the background that seem to explain some of where they got to, but the general feeling, you asked about other vices here.
Yes.
My understanding as a sex addict is that there is something out of the ordinary about the way certain sexual behaviours affect me. Now, maybe that became true at a certain point years ago before I realised it was even a problem. But it's not like anything else in my life. I mean, I'm just a sex addict. I mentioned that our programme is modelled on Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're nothing to do with AA, and I'm not an alcoholic. Certain of my sexual behaviours will do something for me that nothing else in my life will. And I can drink, I can take a few drinks, give myself a headache, learn my lesson, back off a bit. I can eat too much chocolate cake, feel bloated, regret it for a couple of days and think, well, I'll eat some fruit. But with certain of my sexual behaviours, that the consequences, they just won't stop me. You know, that something happens in my mind that makes it okay to return to those behaviours, you know, over and over and over again.
Okay, we've had a couple of texts, one I don't intend to read out, but I will actually pass it on to all three of you, just to, possibly to you, actually, Katrina, because somebody does need help out there. Okay, and if you do have a text and you wish to remain anonymous, or indeed if you'd like to give a call and maybe talk to Katrina off air, 0845 301 1034, the chances are there. How do we get in touch with you, though, as to SAA, or you, or indeed your body?
Right, well, normally, your first port of call really is the helpline number, and we will get back to you as quickly as possible, which usually means well within 24 hours if you call that number.
Mm-hmm.
And it is 07748 050 466. I'll just repeat that, if I may.
Can you hang on? Yeah.
Okay. 07748.
Yep.
050 466. We also have a website, which is www.plymouthsaa.co.uk. So that's www.plymouthsaa.co.uk. And finally, you can email us at the address mail@plymouthsaa.co.uk.
Right, and for any of those people who are out there saying, no way, I'm not going to bring out my character, my personality, how on earth would you persuade people to come forward? Especially, I assume, you don't have to use a name, you don't have to use,
No.
John?
I'd like to say that, anyone who gets in contact with us will be invited to come to a meeting. The meetings are a safe, friendly place. Nobody is going to judge you or want to know anything about you. Something Katrina spoke about earlier about taking responsibility for sexual addiction. I mean, today my responsibility lies in my recovery. You know, I've got to be responsible for my recovery on a daily basis, you know. I don't have to avoid certain places or, today, because I'm a recovered sex addict, I'm free to go anywhere. I can, as long as I wake up in the morning and take responsibility for my recovery for that day, you know. So, mm-hmm. But, come to a meeting, I mean, they recommend you come to 6 meetings before you make a decision on whether, this is for you or not. But if you come to a meeting, you'll listen to people talking about how they've recovered, possibly from similar behaviours that you find a problem, And,
okay.
it is inspiring,
Inspiring is the word.
And I think, really just to follow up what John said, nobody wants to come to SAA. Almost, I don't think anyone's I've met has come out of a sense of idle curiosity. It's usually the very, very last port of call, the last door that's left open. As a result of walking through the door of my local meeting, the group in Plymouth, is the single best decision I made in my life. It took me a very long time to get there, and I wish I'd made it 15 years sooner. And I think everyone in my home group feels that way.
John and Phil, thank you for your honesty and openness today. Katrina, I'll just leave you with one question. Do you think you could possibly be employed by a new government? Because